Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Hello, welcome to the 5 Yard Dynasty Pod with me, Rich Cooling. Got another fantastic show lined up. So joining me today, another of the main men. So it's Stocks. How are you doing, Stocks?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I'm good. Thanks for having me on. It's weird to record behind the curtain. This is, I don't even know, it's Thursday. We're recording Thursday evening. and it's weird to be recording on a Thursday. So it's a nice change for me towards the end of the week. And it's great to be on the pod, you know, big fan. And I've edited your stuff and listened. But this is, I mean, to be fair, I'm not first on. So it's a little bit of a knock. But we'll talk. No, I'm joking, Rich. Thanks for having me on, man. Appreciate it.
No, it's fantastic to have you on. And I opened it up to everybody, and you said that you wanted this topic, so that's why we're getting you on third. But it's been fantastic working our way through the 5 Yard family. As I said, we've got I think Rob coming on next week, and really enjoying getting you guys on and fully integrating. As I said, as part of the family, it's been great. So diving into this week's kind of topic as such. So we're going to play a little game of Would You Rather. So the idea is basically I'm going to give Stocks two players that are perhaps relatively close in kind of ADP or perhaps I think shed some light in terms of sort of thought process around which player you'd rather. Stocks is going to give me which player you'd rather, quite frankly, and then we'll go from there. But before we kind of dive into that, Stocks, so, I mean, in terms of, I guess, your dynasty exposure, how much do you kind of play? Are you, I know, primarily sort of redraft focus? Is that what you'd say? Or,
oh man, I mean, everyone's now aware of how many leagues Murph and I were in last year, and I'd say there was probably more redraft than dynasty, but I'm also in quite a lot of dynasty leagues. I mean, we have unfortunately had to scale that back a little bit just because we sort of said yes to too many people, and it all got a bit too much. Like everyone did with redraft, we did a little bit with dynasty in lockdown one. So got a fair bit of exposure, but I've only really been playing dynasty for 3 years. I think my home dynasty league started 3 years ago, and then we also, Murph and I, then started another home dynasty league with our sort of other friends from the NFL group that we know. And maybe there was one more from sort of the podcast world. And that was all I had for 3 years until last year when Murph and I joined and started a couple more. And so I'm not overexposed in dynasty personally, but as a podcast, Murph and I were in a few too many.
Yeah, I think you're not alone in that. I know lockdown one, it was, yeah, twiddling thumbs, looking for things to do. So certainly joined far too many startups, but yeah, kept me entertained at the time. So I guess diving straight in then. So we're going to work through this in kind of positional order. So it'll be quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, tight ends. So the first would you rather up is going to be, I think, probably the hottest topic at the moment for me in terms of kind of dynasty circles is going to be the QB2. So that is Josh Allen or Kyler Murray. So where are you leaning here, Stocks?
So when I got the show doc the other day, I initially thought Josh Allen. I've got loads of Josh Allen in my dynasty leagues. He's what I built my foundation on 2 years ago in several of my quite successful leagues. So I'm going Josh Allen. And then when I sat down and looked at it and looked through who had good years last year, who didn't have such a good, I mean, they were both pretty good last year, let's be honest. But when I thought about it, I thought Josh Allen, consistent, did it all year. His worst week last year was 16.1 fantasy points, and he was only under 20 points three times. So if you're after consistency, then Josh Allen was the guy. But then when I looked at Kyler, he went under 20 points five times. His worst week was against New England, where he had 8.9 points. That does exclude his week 17 appearance, where he came in when he wasn't fit to start the game, but they brought him in because they were losing, I think, if my memory serves correct, in week 17. Yeah. So the first half of Kyler's season was ridiculous, and he was on an absolute tear. And then he got injured, and the injury wasn't the reason, and then it was the reason why he had a bit of a downturn. So is he going to be all right next year? So I'm literally on the fence with this one as to where I'd want to go. And I think maybe in Dynasty, I'm going to go Kyler over Josh Allen, but I would be happy with either. I know that's such a cop-out of an answer, but...
It's nice to start off the pod with you sitting on the fence on the first one.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, I'll come off of the fence, and I'll come off of the fence for one reason, and that's Stephon Diggs and the fact that he stood on the field when the Chiefs were getting celebrated as the champions. Diggs was the only other person, not a Chief, on the field and stood there and watched the whole thing. And I think his season with Josh Allen was so good that it can possibly get better next year. And that's the reason I'm taking Josh Allen, because I think Stephon Diggs is sneaky good for sort of top three, top two, maybe even number one wide receiver next year.
Ah, fantastic. Well, I think, you know, as you said, it's not a bad choice, is it? It's, you know, you're pretty happy whichever one you go with. I think for me, the reason I picked these two was that it's almost a tale of two halves of the season, isn't it? As you said, Kyler had that incredible start to the year, then got injured, and I think... sort of, we saw a reduction in terms of his rushing production. And then Josh Allen was essentially a league winner down the stretch, wasn't he? I mean, that those last few weeks, obviously Stephon Diggs was the wide receiver one through the playoffs, but that helped with Josh Allen as well. He was absolutely phenomenal. I ran a poll on Twitter asking exactly the same, Josh Allen or Kyler Murray. So Josh Allen actually came out 62% of the vote. So I'm a little bit surprised at that. I thought it would be really close. And I just think for me, I'm going to go Kyler purely because I think that he is a better passer than Josh Allen long term. And I think that at the moment, Josh Allen has been buoyed hugely this year by Stephon Diggs and Brian Daboll. And I worry that he's kind of reliant on that. And I worry if Cole Beasley's getting old, you know, next year could be his last year in Buffalo. I think Brian Daboll's probably going to be a head coach in 2022. And I for that reason alone, I think I'd go Kyler. But as you said, it's not a bad decision, is it?
Question, Rich.
Yeah.
You said it's a tale of two halves, and that's completely true. Do you think... A, lockdown brain has made people a little forgetful, and B, recency bias towards Allen has made more people pick 62% of the people pick Allen. If Murray had a better second half of the season and Josh Allen also had his second half, do you think that would have been closer?
100%. I think it's the reason why, you know, you see someone like Dak Prescott at the moment, he's being ranked as like QB6, QB7. Now, I appreciate some of that is the uncertainty about whether he'll re-sign in Dallas. But before Dak got injured, he was, I think he was averaging 26.5 points per game, which is a point more than both Allen and Kyler. And I think that people have completely forgotten how good Dak was when he was on the field. And I think that's exactly it here, is that Kyler, before he got injured, was producing, a you know, rushing production similar to only really Lamar. He got injured, stopped rushing so much, so didn't put up the incredible kind of points that we expected. And I think that Allen, as I said, had that tear down the end of the year, and that's what's in freshest in people's minds, quite frankly. I also think the fact that Josh Allen is, you know, he's played in the playoffs, he's performed well in the playoffs, and Kyler Murray's been sat at home. So I think that, you know, there's also that playoff bump there slightly as well. So diving into the next guys then, so moving down the, I guess, the ADP list, so some perhaps older quarterbacks. So this is going to be Kirk Cousins or Matt Ryan. So where do you kind of sit here?
I genuinely hated picking on this one.
not a fun pick, is it?
Well, it's such an uninspiring choice. I mean, as good as they both are as quarterbacks, and they're sneaky good. I mean, Matt Ryan should, in theory, be much better than he was last year with the weapons he had available, even without Julio Jones when he was injured. Calvin Ridley's one of the best wide receivers in the league at the moment, and Todd Gurley obviously tailed off towards the end of the season, but they got Hayden Hurst, and then Kirk as well, Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, Dalvin Cook. We saw the emergence of Irv Smith. Yeah, I mean, are they both a little bit disappointing and you're making me pick a damp squib either way? And realistic. So I think, go on.
To let you behind the curtain and the thought process of picking these two is that I said earlier in the year that, well, earlier in the off-season, sorry, that at this point in the year, there is 18 quarterbacks that I'm comfortable having as my QB1 or QB2 in a Superflex. And preferably, I'd have three of those quarterbacks. Now, Kirk Cousins and Matt Ryan were QB17 and QB18 in that. And that's basically my way of saying that I think these two are the last two guys that you're comfortable having as a QB2 in a Superflex league. I think after these two, it becomes slightly nervous, should we say, about whether that quarterback's going to keep their starting spot through the offseason. And I think that actually, at this point of kind of draft, whether it's a startup or indeed kind of roster building, yes, they're not sexy. Yes, they're really uninspiring to pick. But actually, you can do a lot worse than these two who are probably going to be on their team definitely in 2021 and probably in 2022, the way their contracts are structured.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, I guess, the reason why it's there to see where you sort of lean in these two uninspiring choices.
So this was a difficult one because, A, talking about ADP at this point in the season to me is madness, because I think if anybody is drafting fantasy football right now, you're either severely stranded somewhere in the world with absolutely nothing to do, or you need a little bit of a head check because so much can change. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way, and people do enjoy drafting now, I know that, but there's just so much can change between now and what we class as essentially the start of the season, once people have been drafted into the NFL from college and free agents have happened. Then you start to see a real team picture. And for me, I have to take Kirk here based on safety. If you're going to make me pick one of the other, I don't know whether Matt Ryan will be in Atlanta. I don't know whether Julio Jones will be in Atlanta if Matt Ryan stays. If Matt Ryan goes, does he go to a worse team with worse weapons? Because quite frankly, the weapons in Atlanta were pretty good overall, I'd say. So Kirk Cousins, I have to take him here because I know Adam Thielen, Justin Jefferson, Dalvin Cook, Herb Smith are all going to be there next year.
Yeah.
And again, that it's a boring way of looking at it. But if Matt Ryan ends up, I don't know, let's say the Falcons cut him and he ends up in Detroit, is that a good landing spot for Matt Ryan? No. I would much rather him at Atlanta. So I'm taking the safety of Kirk.
But what happens if Matt Ryan gets cut or indeed traded and ends up in San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan and all those weapons?
Yeah, okay. I can see that. But
I guess I think that you're probably right here in that this is an unsexy pick, and that actually sometimes when you're sort of building that roster, sometimes having that unsexy QB2 that, you know, isn't injury prone because neither of them really rush and kind of develop injuries that way. But you know you're going to be able to stick him in as your QB2. They're going to get you somewhere between 15 and 20 points on pretty much every given week. Yeah. And then you can go a little bit sexier with your QB3, whether you want to go and, you know, buy a Taysom Hill or someone like that that has that really, really high upside if he indeed is a starter but could end up completely flaming out and not be a starter for more than a week or something.
That San Francisco take, although we've just seen some stuff on our chat group, this could be completely irrelevant information by the time this go out. But if Matt Ryan, he could well end up in San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan if he does get cut, because the rest of their team is so young. They could have Ryan for a couple of years and then pick another quarterback at another point going forward. Just plug that hole for a little bit and it would make complete sense.
Yeah, I think, and that's the thing with quarterbacks is that realistically, teams in the NFL, you're building around sort of 3 or 4 year windows, aren't you?
Yeah.
And even though Matt Ryan's 35, you'd expect him to be around for at least another 3 or 4 years. So he'd almost be a perfect win-now quarterback for a team like a San Francisco, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
So diving into the running back, so it feels like every person that I've had in the pod so far, we talked about Jonathan Taylor. So I thought I'd continue it and see if we can start a row again within the 5 yard WhatsApp chat. So the next two is going to be Jonathan Taylor or Saquon Barkley.
Jonathan who?
Jonathan Taylor.
No, I just, how is this a question, Rich? How is this a legitimate fantasy football question? I imagine everybody is going to come after me now for this take, but Jonathan Taylor and Saquon Barkley, they're completely different people. Saquon Barkley is one of the best running backs in the league, and as good as Jonathan Taylor is, he's not in the class of Saquon.
Well, I mean, yes, I'm not going to argue with you at all there with that take.
Thank you.
ADP would differ.
Ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. I can't. So the general ADP has Jonathan Taylor as the third running back off the board and Saquon Barkley as the fourth. Now, obviously, these drafts took place 2 weeks after Jonathan Taylor and that week 17 performance. So I think, again, you know, we're talking recency bias. I also wonder if perhaps people are taking into account, obviously, Saquon's 2 years removed since he played a full season. He's also on the fourth year on his rookie deal next year, whereas Jonathan Taylor's only on the second. But yeah, I mean, it is a ridiculous question in that it's Saquon all along, but for me, I'm intrigued to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I would love to have seen the results of a Twitter poll on this percentage wise, because if the ADP is this close, then surely the Twitter poll would be more in JT's favour, purely based on recency bias because of what we've seen. I just think if you're going to pick one of the two, you're going to pick the guy who was touted as a generational talent at running back when coming out of college. And as good as Jonathan Taylor was at Wisconsin, and we saw him do, 6,000 yards, 2,000 yards in 3 seasons running, it's Saquon Barkley is as good as anybody in the league when fit. And the ACL was an ACL takes anybody out for a season. And I don't know. It's all Saquon Barkley all day for me here. And I think if you're getting him behind JT in ADP at the moment, you are pulling the pants down of anybody who drafts Jonathan Taylor ahead of Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe this is a note to say, go out and buy Saquon, because the window's probably about to close as soon as he sees the field again. That price is going to skyrocket, because every time he's been on the field, he's been phenomenal, let's be honest.
The only reason I would take JT here over Saquon in Dynasty is if somehow I'd managed to accumulate another pick before this, or this was a point in a trade, perhaps. It was either Jonathan Taylor or Saquon Barkley that was being offered for somebody on your team, and you had basically an older running back already on your roster, and you could either have Jonathan Taylor or Saquon Barkley. The only reason I might take Jonathan Taylor at that point is purely based on he's only in the second year of his rookie deal and Saquon's a little bit older. But otherwise, it would have to be Barkley.
Yeah. What I would say, though, is that Saquon being a first-round pick obviously gets that fifth-year option. So he's going to be, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent in 2023, but Jonathan Taylor's going to be an unrestricted free agent in 2024. So it's only really 1 year difference on the contract. I appreciate that because he was such a high pick, Saquon's probably going to be re-signed before he gets that fifth year option. But I think as you said, it's mental that it's this close. So then the next running back. So it feels like, I'll be honest, I've been having this conversation for the last 2 years in terms of, would you rather Josh Jacobs or Miles Sanders? And I'll be honest, my opinion has not swayed at all, but I'd be very intrigued to hear yours. So where are you going?
So Nick wrote a really good piece about Josh Jacobs or Miles Sanders, maybe last off-season? It must have been right at the beginning of last off-season. And he had a load of stats and stuff down on it. And it was a really interesting outcome. I don't actually remember who won that, but I remember the argument Nick put forward was really good. And again, this is a case of what happens now in Philly, because had Doug Pederson still been there, this would have been hands down Josh Jacobs all day for me. And I'm still saying Josh Jacobs over Miles Sanders if I have to have one or the other, purely because of the volume we've seen Jacobs get as a Raider, whereas Sanders hasn't shown that he can be that guy because of the RBBC that Philly have used. If he was that good a talent, surely you move away from that committee prospect to unleash your star running back, as it were. So, but then what happens now? There's a new head coach in Philly. Does Sanders get the whole ball and run away with it? So I like the safety of Jacobs. I know what I'm getting with Jacobs, and volume is king with running back. I mean, you can plug anybody in as a running back, and if you give them enough volume, Tom said it on the pod on Monday, anybody can really play running back if you give them enough touches. So if you give Jacobs the touches, we know what he's going to do with them. So the safety of Jacobs is where I'm going here.
Yeah. The only counter to that is I said that if he gave me enough touches, I think I'd snap after one. So I'm not sure I'd be able to put up any volume. But I think with this one, it's a ceiling floor play, isn't it? In that I think Josh Jacobs has got a much higher floor because we know that he's not got much competition. He's going to, you know, he's shown Gruden through 2 years is going to give him the volume on the ground.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to, in a worst case scenario, give you that 15 points a week. Just be a solid, you know, fringe RB1, RB2. You don't feel great about starting him, but you don't feel terrible. Happy days kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Miles Sanders is, you know, he's got the potential. If we saw him get a full workload in Philly, if we saw that offense firing, would you be gobsmacked if he was a top five running back next year? We've seen over stretches of his, you know, the end of his rookie year, when you put everything together, he looked electric and put up points to be a top five through that stretch. But if the Philly offense doesn't take a step forward from where it was this year, you know, if they do go with Carson Wentz and he regresses again, you could easily see, you know, something like this year. Miles Sanders was the, you know, RB22 this year, and you wouldn't be shocked to see him even further down the list next year if the Philly offense doesn't rebound.
Yeah.
And I think it says a lot about kind of where your, I guess, appetite for risk sits, isn't it, as to who you'd prefer?
Yeah, and not only that, do they go with Jalen Hurts? And we've seen running quarterbacks actually hurt running backs' production because of taking the running game away from the running back. So as good as Sanders is, if Jalen Hurts is taking some of that production away, that limits his ceiling. Even if he is his best self, Jalen Hurts is still going to take some of the damage away from Sanders. So
yeah. And we've seen also on that, you know, I guess the big thing that Sanders has got over Jacobs is the passing game usage. Well, you know, we've seen when rushing quarterbacks come in and take over, there's a distinct drop off in terms of the amount of checkdowns and targets that running backs get. Well, if Jalen Hurts is going to, you know, have a 16 game spell with Miles Sanders, are we going to see a real drop off in that targets in where he's in a similar kind of passing game usage to Josh Jacobs? It will be interesting to see.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know off the top of my head what Josh Jacobs' passing numbers were per game, but I think if he averages 4 catches a game, you're pretty pleased with that for what you're getting out of Josh Jacobs.
Yeah, I think I know, you know, it was the big kind of theme throughout last offseason, wasn't it? It was Josh Jacobs was going to get 60 targets and he was going to be used more in the passing game. Well, he had 45 targets last year in 15 games, so 3 a game. Only saw 33 receptions, so he didn't quite get the volume that they were suggesting. But you know, it's not terrible usage, is it? If you're getting 20 carries a week plus those 3 targets in the passing game. So I think the next one for me is my favourite. So this is a case of, I guess, production versus draft capital. So it is James Robinson versus CEH. So before I come to you, Stocks, just to reveal the Twitter poll. So this is about 400 people we polled, and 52% said they would rather CEH and 48% said they'd rather James Robinson. So where do you sit?
Where do you sit, Rich? No. Why is this your favourite? Why is this your favourite?
Because I think it says a lot about kind of what you as a kind of a dynasty, I guess, owner, kind of values. Are you looking at the undrafted free agent who came in with, you know, no hype, no draft capital, but saw huge volume in year one and absolutely produced? Or would you rather the kind of shiny, highly drafted rookie that you know, we had such high hopes. He was a, you know, a top five overall player in kind of preseason ADP, and yet has somewhat underwhelmed in year one. The Chiefs have brought in kind of additional kind of options into that backfield through the season. And, you know, who would you rather have going forward? Is it that draft capital or production?
So I drafted CH twice as my first overall pick in a rookie draft. And at the time, it felt like a tremendous move. And now I'm starting to think I should have taken Jonathan Taylor. I don't know. I'm not bailing on CEH for that reason. But as we've seen, the Chief brings bodies into the backfield. Is that a thing we're going to see going forward? Are the Chiefs going to be running back by committee? And as good as CEH is, they're going to limit his exposure to prolong his career because they know what he can do. And by prolonging his career as a running back, keeping him with Patrick Mahomes, keeping Hill and Kelsey going as long as possible, is that the perfect recipe for Super Bowl after Super Bowl after Super Bowl? And then with James Robinson, my only concern with him is, will he be the running back in Jacksonville next year because of the amount of draft capital they've got? Now, they've got so many holes, it would almost be stupid to go and draft a running back, right? But
yeah, 100%.
We've seen, you know, we just have no idea what Urban Meyer is going to do. Now, if Trevor Lawrence, something happens and he decides to do an Eli Manning and not go to the Jags, then he's going to be a Jacksonville Jaguar, basically. We've seen what he did for Travis Etienne, and as good as Travis Etienne is, he's no Najee Harris for me. I think Najee Harris is a much better running back than Travis Etienne. So will James Robinson get some of that magic fairy dust from Trevor Lawrence and become even better? We've seen, like you said, we've seen him perform with the volume, and maybe he was overused towards the end of the season, got a little bit banged up and tired. But a lot of that was the Jags just weren't very good. And can they turn it round with some of the weapons they've got? Trevor Lawrence, a better defense, new head coach. I think of the two, I want the upside of Robinson compared to an unsureness on CEH. If that unsureness, I don't even know if that's a word, but
we'll it make is it up. Now, it's
fun. I've just added it to my vocabulary of 95% made up words. I want Robinson over CEH here, and I feel dirty for saying so.
I think for me, if there hadn't have been a change in regime in Jacksonville, you know, the previous coach staff, James Robinson was on I think it was almost a 90% opportunity share in that offense, which is unheralded. And if that had been the case that they'd been brought back this year, I'd have felt so much more confident saying, yep, James Robinson. I just, that nervousness of new regime, new head coach, new GM, as you said, I feel like they'd be stupid not to roll with James Robinson. But I feel like so much of his value came because of that incredible workload, that it certainly got me nervous about it. The thing that concerns me with CEH, okay, so this is maybe like one of my favorite stats for the year. So CEH last year in week one had 6 goal line attempts. If you remember that week one game, kept giving it to him on the goal line, he couldn't get it in. How many goal line attempts do you think he had for the other 15 games in the regular season?
Oh, I have no idea. I don't think it's many. I don't think there's many times the Chiefs get to the goal line and have to pound it in from sort of 5 yards. I'd be interested to know what that stat is. I think the Chiefs score more of their touchdowns from further out. So based on that complete guess of knowledge I've just made up there, I'm going to go with 3.
So he had 0.
So oh, I was going to say 0, but that seemed far too obvious.
So he didn't see a goal line attempt after week one last year.
Do you know, did the Chiefs have many goal line attempts?
I don't know is the true answer. I don't have the stats in front of me to go and search that up that quick. But I just think that shows, you know, they brought in Lev Bell. You know, Darrell Williams has been used. I just think that there's a concern around that kind of usage. But mm-hmm. to me, I'm a stats guy. I live by draft capital is king. And for me, I think I'd still go CEH over James Johnson. As difficult as that is for me to say, I don't think it's a great option, to be honest. It makes me quite happy that I went Jonathan Taylor and CeeDee Lamb over CEH in startup drafts and rookie drafts last year. So a pat on the back for me for that one.
Well played, Rich, well played.
Now, the next guy, this is a guy that I can't pat myself on the back because I missed on him, shall we say. But it's another rookie. So it's Justin Jefferson or AJ Brown. So, yeah, again, another Twitter poll. Fairly overwhelmingly Justin Jefferson. So he saw 65% of the vote to AJ Brown's 35. So where do you sit here?
So later on in the podcast, when we get to the dynasty abandonment, I wanted to put AJ Brown in there purely because I went through my teams on my personal dynasty teams and I don't own him anywhere, literally nowhere. But then I love Justin Jefferson and I have him in a couple of places. And in my main home league, I won it not the year gone, just the year before that. So I was picking last and the guy before me was either going to take Henry Ruggs or Justin Jefferson. And I had Adam Thielen and I was praying that Jefferson would slide to me because I was thinking, well, then I can move Thielen on, keep Jefferson and everything would be all right. As it turned out, Jefferson went and I had to take Ruggs, which, yeah, it was a terrible choice. But that was what happened. I can't believe this is so far in Jefferson's favor, run on the Twitter poll, because of how much of a beast AJ Brown is.
Yeah,
this is really difficult for me. Really
and
difficult.
I think it's, you know, startup ADP. So Justin Jefferson's going as the wide receiver 3. AJ Brown's going as the wide receiver 4. You know, points per game this year. So Justin Jefferson scored 16.8. AJ Brown scored 16.7. You know, they're basically neck and neck in terms of whatever stat you look at. They're two of the most efficient wide receivers in terms of yards per route run, yards per team pass attempts, all of those kind of efficiency stats. I guess the question is who do you think will be able to continue being incredibly efficient with their touches kind of moving forward, isn't it?
That's such a difficult one as well, because normally of something like that, you'd think that the team with the better running back would give their wide, that the running back wouldn't do what they did the year before and their wide receiver would get a bit more work. And yet we've got Dalvin Cook with the Justin Jefferson side, Derek Henry with the AJ Brown side. Rich, I genuinely don't know where to go. I think for me, it would be the Justin Jefferson side based on the Tennessee efficiency is just too much still. I think they're still way too efficient to what they should be. And the fact that AJ Brown is recovering from dual knee surgery. Is that right?
Yeah, played 13 weeks of the year requiring knee surgery, which, yeah, when he can be a wide receiver 1 in points per game from that point when he's got two bum knees is pretty scary, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I would literally, if you gave me a pot with two guys' names in on a ball in each one and I had to pick a ball out, I'd be happy with either. But I think maybe the youth and the uninjured knees of Jefferson is where I'm going to go with this one.
Yeah. I think I'm AJ Brown, but my thought process is that Arthur Smith, obviously leaving, I'm a little bit hopeful that that's going to open things up a little bit more, perhaps in the passing game. Obviously, Tennessee were a bottom 3 passing offense in terms of pass attempts per game. And I just think that if that ticks up a little bit under the new offensive coordinator, that's going to be a few more targets for AJ Brown, which could hopefully, you know, if he continues his incredible efficiency, it might be able to tip him up a little bit. But yeah, as you said, it's not a bad choice, is it?
On those lines then, Rich, obviously we saw Corey Davis pretty much break out last year. He was obviously draft capital. You said you're a draft capital guy. I think he was drafted 7th overall, right? Something like that.
I think he was 5th overall, but yeah, ridiculously high, wasn't he?
What if they do pass the ball more? Is Davis going to see more share based on his capital, or do you think they now have two reliable receivers? I mean, it feels ridiculous to call Corey Davis a reliable receiver, but he did.
The interesting thing with Davis is that he's obviously a free agent this year.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, I'm dreaming of him going to. I've got a lot of Corey Davis shares. I bought a lot last offseason because he was so cheap, and I was buying on that draft capital. But I'm dreaming of him going to Green Bay and being the wide receiver two in Green Bay. But I think it will be very interesting. The Titans are up against the cap. I think they've got about $5 million in space. So they've not got a huge amount of money to go out with and get Corey Davis. So it'll be very interesting to see whether they decide to bring him back, or indeed you've also got Johnny Smith is another free agent. So I do think that you're going to see them build around AJ Brown as that offense, whether they bring back Corey Davis or add another receiver somewhere else.
See, Rich, this is why you're our dynasty guy. That sort of in-depth knowledge is why I should have taken AJ Brown, and I'm ruining my decision.
Well, luckily you're editing this, so you can go back and re-record your opinion and change it. So the next guy said, this is, so I'll be honest, I've been asking this conversation for the last, it felt like I asked this conversation at the beginning of the season last year, and then halfway through the season, and then at the end of the season. And I still don't think people are getting it right. So I'm intrigued to see if you're now going to get it right. So this is the Pittsburgh three, should we call them? So it's Deontay Johnson, Juju Smith-Schuster and Chase Claypool. So where are you going here?
I don't like, Rich, that there's a right answer to this. I feel like you've shoehorned me into making the wrong decision, which isn't fair. I'd like to take a time out and consider my options. So I will put my hands up. And last season, I thought with Deontay Johnson being fit, Big Ben back, the defense as good as it was, obviously Pitsy is a Steelers fan, and we had discussions about this as well. I was so high on Juju last year. I had him as my wide receiver one, I think, going into the season in standard. I just thought he was going to have the season of all seasons because he needed to for his contract and was going to get himself a decent deal again at the Steelers. At the start of the season, obviously, the season happened and Juju didn't do that at all. I was really high on Claypool in my rookie profiles in last year's playbook. People laughed at me on how high I was on Chase, and it turns out guy's pretty good at football.
You were very right on that one. That's absolutely.
Is he a big time play guy only? Not sure. And then Deontay Johnson's pretty good as well. This is a difficult pick because of Juju's free agent status. Hypothetically, Rich, help me out here. Do you think Pittsburgh re-signed Juju?
Absolutely not. I think he's gone. I think he's 100% gone. I can't see a world where, you know, they've got limited cap resources. I think that they've got a plethora of options. You know, you've obviously got James Washington as the deep threat to throw in there as well. I think it would be cap suicide if they re-signed Juju, given the fact that, you know, they've got holes elsewhere within the team. And I think Juju's probably going to command somewhere in sort of the $15 million a year range. I think he's absolutely gone in free agency.
Okay. Along that lines then, give me a team where Juju lands. Just a hypothetical team where you think Juju could land, and I'll choose from the Juju at that team.
So my dream landing spot, I'm giving this all away because I'm writing an article on this in 2 weeks. So my dream landing spot for Juju is Miami, because I think that he can go to Miami. He will play out the slot. They've already got two established outside receivers, but I think he will go and be the target leader out of the slot, but not have to play outside, if that makes sense. That's my ideal landing spot. I also think you could quite easily see him in New York with the Jets. I have toyed with the idea of him going to New England. You know, they've got a huge amount of cap space up there, and I do wonder if, with gaping holes at receiver, you could see Bill Belichick go out and get somebody like a Juju.
Okay. I don't think he's going to Miami, but considering that was where you wanted to put him, I will put him there as the sort of Jarvis Landry role that Miami used a long time ago now. I've got this stupid love for Juju that I don't know where it comes from. And I can hear Murph in my head now saying, don't love any football players. Don't have a guy because it will come back and haunt you. So on that basis, I don't think I should pick Juju, but I want to. I'm going to take Deontay Johnson just because of what we've seen from him.
You've picked the right answer.
Yes, I passed.
I just think that he is, you know, volume is king. And I think they've shown that when he is fit, when he is healthy, he is absolutely the number one guy in that offense. I think, yes, Chase Claypool is more of your, I guess, traditional alpha X receiver. But I think that Johnson Johnson is, you know, you look at his PFF stats, he is elite all over the field. He's a fantastic route runner. Yes, he's got questionable hands, but I think drops are massively overrated. He was the wide receiver 18 this year. He averaged 15 points a game. But I think you also look at that. He averaged 15 points a game. Remember, he left two games in the first quarter, having scored, I think, 1 point in one game and zero in another. So I think he's if you take those two games out, he was like a top eight receiver last year. And I think that this offense for the next 2 years is going to run through Deontay. And I think that you've got Claypool as their, you know, big play. Is he going to be a down the field threat and a screen catch guy? And that's why I don't buy into Claypool being, you know, he could be what DeSean Jackson was. I don't even know how long ago we're talking, eight, nine years ago, where he could, you know, easily put up 30 points in 1 week and win you the week. But then for the next 2 weeks, put up zero or like 2 or 3 points. Do you know what I mean? And I think that the uncertainty of Juju, as you said, being a free agent, for me, just warns me off a little bit. I think if he finds a fantastic landing spot, yes, he could overtake the other two. But at the moment, you know, current ADP, Juju's the wide receiver 18, Deontay's wide receiver 21, and Claypool's wide receiver 24. So, you know, for me, if I could trade Juju straight up for Deontay, I would absolutely be doing that every day of the week.
Rich, I have a question. This is a Dynasty podcast. I'm going to peel the curtain back ever so slightly on the playbook. I wrote about Tutu Atwell, wide receiver from Louisville last night. Do you have an opinion on Tutu Atwell? Because one of my knocks was drops, and that's because he was a quarterback in high school, moved to wide receiver when going to the Cardinals. So obviously, catching wasn't his thing in high school, so he's had to learn how to do it. So a few things were drops. But you just said drops are overrated, so I like that for Tutu Atwell.
I think, having said drops are overrated, I think there's a difference in terms of drops. And I think that drops as a wide receiver in terms of kind of coming out as a rookie, to me, is a little bit of a concern, because I think it shows perhaps, you know, as you said, it's a little bit different for Tutu because, as you said, he's a convert. He's not played wide receiver. He's not that natural receiver. Whereas for Deontay, yes, he's had lots of drops, but you see that the offense and the, you know, the team still believe in him and they're still giving him the volume to go out and target him a lot. In regards to Tutu, I'm actually pretty high on him. I really like him. I think he's got, you know, if you look at the kind of the stats side of things, you know, he's got a fantastic breakout age. He broke out at 19. He's done pretty well in terms of kind of dominator rating and stuff like that. You look at yards per team pass attempt. He's pretty good. He's averaging over one. I think that a lot will depend on draft capital. And I do think that he could potentially be a bit of a steal come May. If he could get day two draft capital, then I think I'll probably be all in on him come April, May. if he drops to the sort of fourth, fifth round, then I'll probably be leaving him well alone. But I am very, very intrigued.
Good.
is that agree with your opinion on him then?
Correct answer. You've Yeah, I'm really high on him. No, I'm really high. That's not true. I think he's just outside my top 10. But I think as a prospect with upside, Tutu's got everything you could possibly want in an explosive guy. I don't think his height's an issue. His weight's a little bit of an issue, and we don't know whether he's maxed his frame out wise in muscle regard yet, and whether he can add a bit more weight to just stay survivable. If that makes sense. But yeah, speed, just everything you'd want from a fast guy who has big, big, big playability. Tutu Atwell is my man.
Yeah. So I've currently got him as my wide receiver 13 at the moment, but that is on the preface that he's going to get day 3 draft capital. If he gets picked in the second or third round, he will probably likely jump up into my next year, which would be put him around wide receiver 8, wide receiver 9. So, yeah, I'm very excited to see where he lands, because it's set the ceiling is the roof, as Michael Jordan once said.
Yeah.
So the final positional pick. So this is tight end. So I've gone with two guys that played together, came out as rookies together, and have kind of been thrown in together despite being incredibly different in playing style. So that is TJ Hockenson and Noah Fant. The Twitter poll was pretty unanimous in terms of TJ Hockenson. So 77% Hockenson, 23% Fant. So where are you here?
I'm disappointed, Twitter sphere. I am disappointed.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I'm excited for this. Go on then, hit me.
I'm a Broncos fan, man. How am I not going to choose Noah Fant here? It's when Murph and I talked about Noah Fant as a prospect on the podcast, Murph was all in because of his athleticism and what he did in college. Now, I get he's not the complete package like Hockenson, but Denver didn't draft him to be so. I think what we've got to remember for Noah Fant as well is Drew Locke has only really played, I want to say, 12, 14 proper games in the NFL. And what we need to see is a Drew Locke. I mean, I hope Denver don't move on this year. I think there's other things we could do with the picks that would be better for a team. And I think if Cortland Sutton comes back healthy and Jerry Jeudy, if you have four receivers on the field with Jeudy, Sutton, KJ Hamler, speed on the outside or running from the slot, and then you release Fant from the line as sort of a block and go, as we've seen Gronk do so well, I think Noah Fant could be that short range guy who just eats up catches and is a big time red zone threat. And I just don't see how the poll has got him so far, Hockenson so far ahead of Fant. We saw it in Hockenson's first year. He had one good game. I mean, last year was different, but with Matt Stafford saying he wants out and Detroit speaking to over half the league about Stafford, let's say, I mean, there's been talk about Stafford to Denver, and obviously Stafford's used his tight end. What does that do for Noah Fant if Stafford goes there?
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, I'd lean Hockenson purely, I guess this is perhaps recency bias in that 12 months ago, I was Fant over Hockenson every day of the week. I thought that Hockenson was a better tight end than Fant, but I thought Fant was going to put up better fantasy numbers. I guess two things have got me scared is that I don't think that Denver use him correctly, and I don't think that Drew Locke can produce enough fantasy relevant players to feed Sutton, Jeudy and Fant. And I think that Fant comes third in that list, if that makes sense in terms of volume. And I think that you've only got to look at, so I was digging in the off season, a couple of weeks ago, sorry, into how Denver actually used Noah Fant. Now, he ran over 700 snaps this year. He lined up as an inline blocker on over 600 of those snaps. He had less than 100 snaps as a wide receiver, whether that be slot or out wide. And to me, you've only got to look at Noah Fant play, and he should be being used like a Mike Gesicki does in Miami, where he is essentially a big slot. And I think that if he is going to get used as that, I'd be really excited about it. But for me, he's just used so much as an inline tight end, which is just not why you drafted him as high as you did. It seems slightly confusing. I'd be
sickening.
Keen. Yeah, it is mental. I'd be keen to hear your thoughts on this, because I was kind of championing Albert O as a nice little buy heading into the season, because I think people were forgetting about him. Obviously, he was a massive kind of tight end in terms of Debbie Circles sort of 2 or 3 years ago. Obviously, he had that little stretch in the middle of the year where he was, you know, almost fantasy relevant because of his red zone usage. Do you see him eating into Fant's kind of production next year if and when he comes back healthy?
I think you've got to look back to the time when you had Albert O in your Devy teams and what he did with Drew Locke, their friendship, and how they played together, to see just what they can do as a tandem. And I think you'd be almost looking at it with Fant-coloured blinkers on if you weren't to expect Albert O eating into Fant's productivity, because what Albert O can't do is block. That guy, if you put him in 600 times snap, as a blocker, you're doing something completely wrong as coaching, because by the first 25, you'll notice that he can't block anyone. So there could, having heard that Fant was used 600 times as a blocker rather than as a runner, a route runner, I can see a world now where perhaps they use Fant more as the blocking guy and Albert O as the sort of pass catching tight end, which sickens me to say, but there's definitely something in that stat, you know. Yeah. And it's and worrying
to give the other side of it. So TJ Hockenson, almost identical snap count, he was an inline blocker 463 times and lined up outside, either in the slot or out wide, 302 times.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's pretty telling, isn't it?
Yeah. But what I can't get is that TJ Hockenson is, you know, your more prototypical inline tight end.
Yeah.
Yet Detroit have shown that they're going to be forward thinking enough to move him around and, you know, get in those free releases from the slot. And yet Denver just haven't done that with Noah Fant at all. And that's, for me, while I've kind of flipped. As I said, I was Team Fant 12 months ago, and I'm absolutely TJ Hockenson now. I think he's my tight end 3 at the moment in terms of dynasty value.
I want to take an audible, Rich. I want to join Team Hockenson.
It's nice that I've persuaded you against one of your Broncos.
Well, like you said, he's third, fourth in line of receptions anyway, so he's going to be irrelevant. I mean, Twitter was right.
It's never happened before and will never happen again, but on this one, they're right. So that concludes the kind of would you rather. So all that's left, Stocks, is for you to reveal your 2 Dynasty Island picks. So this is a player that you want on your Dynasty Island, and then a player that you want to abandon on a Dynasty Island. So where are you here?
Well, what sort of description are you after here, Rich? Because I've got several names that I can give to you depending on description needed. No, so
I've not had that question before.
My Dynasty Island picks. I like to build. That's a lie. I was going to say I like to build my teams around running backs, but that's a silly thing to do in Dynasty football when wide receivers last longer. But somebody I own absolutely everywhere, and I am completely ride or die. And now this isn't AJ Green. I've moved off of that train. my ride or die in Dynasty at the moment is Dalvin Cook, and I love what he does with the football. I am aware that he has an injury history, but last year he proved that he can basically play the whole year and is supremely talented and is in an offense where they are prepared to use him. And for that, I am going to be Dalvin Cook's ride or die until he is no longer playing football. So if I can get Dalvin Cook absolutely everywhere, then I will, because I believe that having one stud running back is essential if you want to be a good dynasty team.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think that's the way to build, is around that one stud. Are you concerned about Gary Kubiak retiring and riding off into the sunset and not being around next year?
I don't think so. I think what we've seen from the Vikings over the last couple of years is such a good, well-oiled blueprint for what they want to do as a football team. I think it would have to take somebody very different in mentality to come in and try and change it when it almost works so well, if that makes sense. You give Justin Jefferson another year in that offense, get that secondary that is so young, once that's a bit more tuned in, I think it would be silly to move away from what does work for them, if I'm honest.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Mike Zimmer's still there, isn't he? It's his philosophy around run the ball. So I don't think that's going to be changing anytime soon, certainly. So who are you abandoning? So who don't you want to own in any of your leagues next year?
This was a ridiculously difficult question. Because
you had so many.
Yeah, pretty much. There isn't a guy I don't think I own, like, apart from AJ Brown. But I can't abandon him because he's had knee surgery and might need help swimming off the island. So I think I wrote a list, and my list was Allen Robinson. I don't own very much, but I wouldn't abandon. Chris Godwin, I don't own him except in one place, but I wouldn't abandon. But his usage is a bit worrying with how much Mike Evans got targeted in the end zone. And then Miles Sanders, purely because of what we've seen so far. But I genuinely don't have a decent answer for this.
You're going to sit on the fence and not give one?
Oh, I can't. No, I mean, of those three, it's Miles Sanders, just because of what we've seen. I don't want to base my dynasty team around him because it's a concern. I'd rather go and get someone who I know had the workload and was going to be productive with it.
Fantastic. Well, there you have it. We're abandoning Miles Sanders on Nolan. Murph will be very, very happy, I'm sure. But thank you ever so much for coming on Stocks. It's been fantastic to have you, and thoroughly enjoyed it. For the people, I'm sure, let's be honest, everybody listening knows exactly where you are, but where can we find you? Where can we listen to you?
Rich, we don't know that. They might have Googled Dynasty Podcasts in their podcast app. This one's come up, and this is the first Dynasty podcast they've listened to. So they don't know that there's another show about just generic fantasy football earlier on in the week from this Dynasty beauty we're recording right now. They don't. You have to treat every episode as we've got new listeners. So if you are, this is your first episode to 5 Yard Rush, welcome. This is the Dynasty edition with Rich Cooling and myself, today's guest, Stocks. I co-host the 5 Yard Rush Fantasy Football podcast, which is with the big man Murph. He's also been on the show, but if you're a new listener, you wouldn't know that. So go back to the back catalogue and check that one out. We are on Twitter at 5 Yard Rush. Check out the website, Does anyone do that anymore? It's just 5yardrush.co.uk. Don't worry about the World Wide Web bit. I'm talking too much, Rich. Try and stop me. And then finally, don't forget to head over to Twitter and check out the pinned tweet about the Hickories giveaway we're doing. You've got to follow us, follow Hickories, and tag two friends for a chance to win their Super Bowl food box, which will be delivered on Saturday before Super Bowl. And it's all free. You just have to follow us, follow them, and tag two friends. So if you tell two friends to tag two friends to tag two friends, Hickories would love you forever.
Absolutely. And it is an incredible feast. So make sure you go and check it out, because, I'm very jealous that I won't be able to win that. So thank you ever so much for joining us. Thank you ever so much for giving us a listen. And we will see you again next week.